I think, again, a very terrific question, Sujay. So, quality of life features and then core competency equal to security and reliability are 100% always intact. They're never compromised. Yes, we are less picky about the UI. We would make an exception and say, just say this is an error. But in our business, because it is security and access, we just can't compromise the quality of the product.
Welcome to the Business Developer Podcast with Sujay, a source of inspiration for business developers. By listening to this podcast, you may gain some ideas, inspirations, or food for thought towards your own journey of developing your business successfully, now or in the near future. Thanks to each one of you who listened to the previous part 1 episode with Resha Shroff, wherein we learned that qualifying the deals is key to success in a business. In this episode, we shall continue our discussion with Resha and learn more from her journey till now. So please join me in continuing my discussion with our guest, Resha Shroff. Now tell me, this team was there, you had this business idea, initial customers. Then how did you start building up this company in terms of brand awareness? Did you focus on that part initially, or you kept brand a little bit for later and the marketing part of your business?
Sujay, we focused on marketing in a much later aspect of our journey. And like I mentioned, the first few months or even a year or two were more focused around sales and relationships. Mm-hmm. Now, this is possible only because we are a B2B organization, meaning we are a business that sells to a business, and marketing and brand comes in much later. Mm-hmm. And it's the relationship, the product, that will triumph over the brand position. So we had that choice to make. So I think for listeners' benefit, I would rather say that it's important for each one to figure out who is their customer and how you're going to reach them or sell to them. Do you find your customers on digital platforms and media? Or do you need to reach them at a conference or an event, or your sales is going to happen because of a rainmaker or a referral? Mm-hmm. So I think those things are important to understand, which means you need to first identify, are you a sales-led organization or are you a marketing-led organization, you know, within from a go-to-market strategy perspective.
Right.
We were a sales-led organization. And hence, focusing on our qualification criteria was far more important than building a brand. Mm. Another thing to kind of answer to your question, businesses use brands to justify the, you know, the decision they're making. So to give you an example of Y2K, IBM suddenly saw that their sales actually increased. Why? Because it was such a delicate time. People didn't want to lose their jobs, even if IBM was more expensive. People wanted to take a decision based on, I know I took a decision that I won't get fired for.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's where the brand position comes in, which is that inherent trust or inherent guarantee that it's going to be a sort of a safe decision, which also brings you to, who do you sell to? We sell to CEOs, COOs, owners, founders of different, you know, small and medium businesses or owner-operated businesses. We don't sell to enterprises.
Right.
So for us, the brand trust comes in much later, because an owner is going to be far more confident on their choice than a director of operations or, you know, manager of guest services.
Yeah, true.
So those are the things that one should keep in mind, that is the brand and the, you know, what the brand stands for going to be an integral part of the decision making or not?
Yep.
And based on that, one should, you know, kind of in the beginning as a startup, I mean, you have so few resources in terms of money and people.
Right.
And that's how we pick and chose on where we would spend, you know, our $1 million.
True. I think very well said, Resha, that who you're selling to, not only the organization you're selling to, but the individuals within the organizations, right? Since you're selling mostly to the owners at this stage, you are building trust more through the solution and the services and the experiences you are providing to them rather than the brand support or a comfort factor, right?
Right. And our customers trust the people they are talking to, right? So that's the sales team.
Right.
Can they consult them? Can they talk technology?
Mm-hmm.
Can they come across as a person who's been there, done that, or I know this regulation, you don't need a device like that.
Mm-hmm.
Can they wear that consultative hat and actually tell the customer that they're in good hands once they come with links? Because most hospitality businesses aren't, you know, filled with tech-savvy people, right? So they're looking for a technology partner they can trust. So we rather, you know, spend resources in training our sales team to be able to be consultative, even if they weren't engineers themselves.
Yeah. I think this is a good point. A thought comes to my mind. I want to just take you through and get your opinion on that. You're talking about this trust through these experiences, right? I want to bring perfection into this equation. How do you and your team see perfection when you're releasing a next version of your product or the platform? How you're dealing with the perfection topic? Are you looking for 100% to be perfect because you need to deliver on that trust or experience? Or you are saying, no, it is 80%, 90%, let it get out of the door and we resolve it as we go along. Really be excited to hear your views on that.
I think, again, a very terrific question, Sujay. So in the beginning years, it was always about 100% perfection. We would thoroughly test everything, you know, 3 to 5 times before we would, you know, push it out into the production environment.
Right.
Now, that was also possible because the product was very small. When you have just 2 integrations or 4 integrations, it's far easier to test every single branch a couple times and get it right. Now, the product, like I said, has 300 different devices, 25, 27 different property management softwares, very different use cases between vacation rentals. We expanded into service apartments and apart hotels. And then we also expanded into hotels, bed and breakfast, motels as well.
Mm-hmm.
So all of them have very different use cases. And the product accommodates all of that. So still our, you know, threshold is very, very high in terms of everything is tested at least twice. Between, so well, you know, at least 3 times, I would say, at a unit level, and then at a product level, we test it twice. And then once it is released, we test the entire production environment again.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of brings it to 4 times, right? So we still have a very high bar for quality and reliability.
Mm.
And the reason for that is because we're controlling people's businesses. I mean, we're controlling their doors.
Right.
We're really controlling access.
True.
It is security.
Right.
It cannot be taken for granted. And it cannot have bugs. So the core functionality, or as you call it, as QOL of your customer, quality of life of your customer.
Okay.
The features which impacts the quality of their life, which means if I get an angry guest, it impacts the quality of his day. You know, dealing with an escalation he shouldn't be dealing with.
Mm.
So quality of life features and then core competency equal to security and reliability are 100% always intact.
Mm.
They're never compromised. Yes, we are less picky about the UI. We couldn't accommodate every single error message to be displayed. We would just say something went wrong or just contact or, you know, raise a ticket here. So we're less focused on the UI element of it. We would make an exception and say, just say this is an error. Don't say error number so and so. It's fine, you know. But in our business, because it is security and access, we just can't compromise the quality of the product.
True. At a good point, I think you broke it down. Means at some points, you need to drive that perfection, but some other areas you can have a different variant. So breaking down their entire offering, and you talked, there's some features which impacts the quality of life for your customers and their customers. So that becomes a no compromise zone. But there could be other areas where it's still a quality product, but to what detail level you go to, like speaking of the error messages. So that would be really smart for product owners and business developers to make that judicious choice and determination at what can be compromised and what must not be compromised, right?
Absolutely.
That's great, Resha. Now, I think really interesting thoughts. I'm really excited about the points that you're sharing. Maybe then taking to the other parts of it, we talked about resources and limited resources. Taking to the funding of it, how did you start your business? Was it bootstrapped, or if you have brought external sources of funds into your business, how did you deal that aspect and what timing and etc.?
Yeah, so we bootstrapped the company in the beginning, especially at the MVP phase. Mm-hmm. But we also, my co-founder, he was doing his MBA at Chicago Booth School of Business. So we took our idea at the MVP stage into the New Venture Challenge competition. Mm-hmm. And with that MVP, we were one of the finalists that actually won, you know, the New Venture Challenge.
Wow.
So we did get a lot of funding. Well, not a lot, because it's still a university, but we did get some funding of, you know, like $30,000 or something that helped us, you know, build the MVP to a level where we could actually show it to a prospect or a customer, you know. And then we put in our own money as founders. Only when we had our first customer, which was technically, that's what we called as our product launch, we went and raised money from micro VCs in Chicago at that time, because that's where the company was. And that's when we raised our first round, which was back in 2007. And, oh, sorry, 2017. I'm saying 2007. 2017. And then we haven't had to raise since, thankfully, because again, the pricing strategy where we put a lot of emphasis on has meant a very strong unit economics. So we haven't felt the need to raise, you know, after that first round.
Wow. That's very nice that you're able to manage that unit economics and your customers' business and the revenues are able to fund your development. That's great, right?
Absolutely.
Not diluting yourself at this stage when it is not needed. But have you formed some framework or thinking that, okay, this would be a right stage when we go for more of a big bang, larger VC to scale it up? Or do you want to grow through your own pace of business generating cash and reinvesting into it?
So for us, fortunately, you know, and I keep reading a lot of stuff around reports that analyze startups, SaaS startups specifically in different stages and phases of the journey, and then comparing them as bootstrapped versus VC funded, right?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously bootstrapped companies are going to be very efficient in the sense that they need less money to generate, you know, the same amount of growth, where VC funded companies tend to spend 2 to 3 times that money to generate the same time amount of revenue.
Mm.
So we've learned efficiency in the first few years of our business, which I think is so valuable, because it forced us to not do business if it wasn't, you know, sustainable, right?
Yeah.
Which also means that, like I mentioned to you, we had a much stronger qualification criteria so that we won't have one or two customers drowning us, and then they could have left us where we would be completely depleted. Trying to win them, but it wouldn't have actually worked out anyways. So for us right now is not the time to be raising funds, because we have been able to grow 2x, 3x, or even more throughout the last few years, which is very, very good, even if you're a VC company, right? VC funded. So being a bootstrapped organization, we're very pleased with, you know, how the company has grown, which has been at least 3x for the first 3 years and then 2x afterwards. So we're meeting all VC metrics, and we're doing that on purpose to, you know, to kind of give ourselves a goal that that's what we need to do. And if we think we can do that, that's when we go and raise funds and dilute ourselves.
Great, Resha. Thanks a lot for sharing that dimension. Really, truly amazed by all your experiences. It shows how you're speaking, all the nitty-gritties experiences that you have gone through. So if you can look back and take a rear-view mirror of your journey for 3 years that you have spent as a business developer developing in your company, if you, for the benefit of the audience, if you can call out a few of the key character traits from your point of view, from your vantage point, what do you think are the key character traits of someone who is looking to develop a software product business, a B2B SaaS company to be specific? Can you share something on that?
Absolutely. I think this entire podcast is then kind of, you know, exactly what we talked about.
Yeah.
But, you know, as founders, there are just so many traits that you just have to have. You have to be a hustler in the beginning. And then you have to have patience. You have to be constantly learning. Reach out to mentors. Don't be afraid. People are always ready to help. If you just reach out, just let that shame or anything just, you know, slide. Also, I'll say that you have to have a really, really big appetite for, you know, having bad days, having days where there will be a lot of self-doubt, and there will be days when you're thinking, what am I doing? Am I doing something that's going to make a difference? Is it going to be something someday? And then still find that hunger and passion and, you know, energy to shake it all off and say, I know if I do these three small things, it's going to get me to this one milestone. And when I get to that one milestone, all I need to focus on is the next three small things and break it down and keep pushing yourself forward, you know. So it's a lot of things. It's a character test founding a company.
Yeah, so. True. And with all the courage that you need to display at every stage, as you said, and you. So you must have also experienced, as you also spoken earlier in this episode and this podcast, that you have also grown as an individual, right, over this past 3 years.
Absolutely. I mean, and I'm that's the part that is, again, you know, a lot of founders will say this, but now I understand what that means, is because it's the journey that matters. It's what you feel every day. How you wake up at 4 a.m. because you suddenly had this idea, and you know if you did that, it could mean something, you know? It's the drive is so fascinating that when I look at myself, you know, like today's Resha looking back at the one that was 3 years ago, I'm truly amazed, and kind of that feeling of pride in a good way that, gosh, you know, we all did this as a team. And we sit down, the core team, and we kind of talk about that many times as to that journey. And that's the one, that's that experience, that journey that I think, I hope everyone gets to, you know, experience it. It's beautiful.
Yeah, true. That's certainly the journey is actually the key, right? Even though the outcomes matter, but it's the means of how you're approaching that entire journey of business development. That's where it gives the satisfaction. But now tell me, Resha, a founder goes through so many things, as you talked about, waking up 4 a.m. in the night. You are the key crux of this entire initiative that you're doing. So it's very important that you stay fit, you take care of yourself physically and mentally. What's your thoughts on that, and how do you go about doing that? Because it's like the analogy, if you go in a plane, if you have a low pressure situation, you have to put the mask on yourself first before trying to put it on others. So you are the key point or the key person here for this business, for this initiative, for your customers, for your employees and the team. So how do you take care of yourself?
I'll be very honest. The first 2 years were pretty bad. And then there was this realization, this is not sustainable. how we want to build a sustainable business, we need to build a sustainable us, you know, as founding team. So, and you know, then by that time we also had a team and the stress and pressure was much lower. The sinusoidal wave was much, you know, longer in the sense that there were many, many days and weeks that were good days and weeks. The self-doubt was less. So I think all of that together helped us, you know, start making a different routine. It's kind of important to know that now you've crossed this milestone, which means now you're in a different league. And you don't play college basketball the same way you play major leagues, you know, or vice versa.
Right.
Your discipline, your effort, the way you play the game is all different. And so as founders, we're just players, right? So we have to adapt to the league we are in. And one of that was getting back to eating healthy, making sure we had packed lunches. You know, otherwise we would starve till like four and not realize that the day had passed and none of us had eaten anything, you know? So it was small things, exercise, taking a walk at lunchtime, not working on weekends or working only alternate Saturdays. I mean, you know, everything, you know, it was like a process of saying, okay, let's try and get there as a founding team. But yeah, I mean, self-care is, and health, you know, none of us are getting younger, so...
Right. Good, good. Yeah, I wanted to bring that point out because every business developer is going through that journey. Every founder more so is going through that journey. Taking care of oneself is key and most important. Unless you do that, you can't take care of others and the business. Great, Resha. Thank you for sharing those. I would love to now move to our next segment of this podcast, a segment where, just to give you a little bit context around it, as you talked about, you have gone through a lot of learnings over these past 3 years. You have a new Resha right now standing as it was 3 years back. You've learned so many things, but I don't know whether you have experienced, but I think there's an important concept of unlearning too, because we gather so much learnings over our past, but if we have to imbibe new learnings, we might need to let go some of the old past habits or some baggages of the past, which are unlearnings. And unlearnings might become more difficult as they have become part of us, part of our habit. So do you have some experiences of unlearning, Resha, that you can share?
Sure, Sujay. I mean, there are so many of them. But since this is Business Developer Podcast, I'll just stick to that aspect, you know. You know, like we talked about in the beginning, my 15 years of, you know, sales experience has been enterprise and has been services. And as Links Automation, we're a product, not a service. And then we are selling small and medium businesses where we aren't selling enterprise. So, you know, not every sales cycle has to be a 6 month sales cycle. So small and medium business cycles, you know, and then how you sell SaaS. Those were all the things that I had to learn, but which also meant unlearning, you know, a 10 touch point sales cycle, unlearning 6 months long sales cycle, unlearning when you're selling to a founder or an owner versus, you know, like five different people that come together to make a decision. I had to forget all of that. And the only thing I had to remember from that 15 years of experience is how people buy and how people make decisions. Other than that, everything else had to be unlearned so that I could learn and establish a sales cycle, which was two touch points, 1 to 4 weeks long. And 4 weeks was, you've missed something here, you know. So I hope that answers the question here, but it was really tough to kind of come up with a sales cycle and kind of design a sales cycle with still some steps or phases to kind of say, this is what my deal cycle looks like when it's just a week long, you know?
Right, right. That's great. Thanks a lot, Resha, for sharing that. Yeah, those unlearnings are very important and critical. Good. So, Risha, as we come towards the close of this podcast, lovely time spent with you, do you have anything that you'd like to share with our audience through this podcast?
I hope everyone found this useful, but if someone wants to reach out to me, I'm very open and, you know, to help anyone. So that's something I wanted to leave for your podcast listeners. They can always kind of come and talk and, you know, reach out.
Thanks a lot for sharing those. Really great talking to you here, Risha. Thanks a lot to come to the Business Developer Podcast and share all your experiences and learnings with our audience. Really appreciate it. I'm sure they would have also loved listening to this and taking some learnings and food for thought for themselves. Thank you, Risha, for today.
Thank you so much, Sujay. I'm so glad you called and I could be a part of this initiative.
Thanks to you, Risha. Have a nice day ahead. Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Balancing between speed and perfection is critical for maintaining trust with customers while growing a business. This is one of the learnings I have taken from today's episode. What learnings have you taken? Hope this episode helps you draw your own learnings. Do give me a high five if you like this episode. I would love to hear your feedback and suggestions for improvement. You have multiple channels to do so. On LinkedIn, YouTube, Instagram, or email me directly. My contact information is provided in the episode notes. That's it for now. Watch out for the next episode of the Business Developer Podcast. Till then, stay happy, healthy, keep learning, and continue developing your business in a sustainable manner. Bye for now.